This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:06 on the evening edition with Kelvin and Hezriel. We're now looking at the international coordination efforts that's required to tackle COVID-19, the COVID-19 outbreak. It's specifically at the bigger picture on how countries are collectively tackling the outbreak globally and what this looks like here in Southeast Asia.
So as G7 leaders plan a video conference today to look at a few joint response options, banks have already stepped in to do their part. The U.S. Federal Reserve, for instance, slashed their interest rates to zero to lower borrowing costs, and other central banks like New Zealand's slashed interest rates by 75 basis points as the Bank of Japan plans to hold an emergency meeting today.
Yep, beyond this and closer to home, ASEAN senior health officials held a special meeting to address streamline efforts, and some steps is taken since the outbreak began is to share information such as travel history for individuals who've tested positive, filtering fake news, and so on.
Yeah, so the other day, talking about concerted efforts, I think there's been a lot going on in the news reporting about, you know, how these officials are meeting on the high level to really tackle this issue, which has now been labeled a pandemic.
Yeah.
But when I talked to my friend the other day who recently visited Bangkok like 2 weeks ago, she said that when she filled out, she filled out a form asking, you know, her to list down the countries she's been to. And when she passed it along to the immigration officer, he basically didn't even take a glance, put it in some pile and just, you know, let her through. So it really brings into question this, you know, this gap between what, you know, all these high level talks are about, you know, streamlining efforts to work together to share information about patients' travel histories, and that gap between what's actually happening on the ground with the most important people in this picture, actually the people who are on the front lines doing this every day.
I think at this point in time, we were asked to sort of stay, not be as close to each other right now. I think there is an urgent need for countries to work even closer together, you know, maybe through a video conference or whatever. But there is that need, right? Because I think with this one, it's highlighted how collectivist and how much of a community we are. I think just as a globe, right, we do seem to, when a health system in one country is weak, what we find is that because they aren't able to perhaps contain it as well, other countries within the region are also affected. So even if our systems are sort of separate, there is this increasing need to sort of maybe streamline that just a bit more.
Yeah, and it's also a question of perception. When you talk about perception, it reminds me of how Malaysians living in Johor are always looking at what people on the ground are doing in Singapore. You know, when there's panic buying in Singapore, then the same thing happens to supermarkets in Johor, and it really affects everyone here. You know, the officials, frontline fighters on the ground fighting the outbreak, but also citizens who are very much in tune with what's going on in our neighboring countries and sort of mirroring these behaviors. And so it really brings I think it really is important to clamp down and try to find a way to contain this hysteria and prevent people from, believing everything that goes through their WhatsApp messages. And some of my relatives are victims of that, and they tell me all these things, and I tell them to sort of just take a step back and see what's been said by, you know, the Ministry of Health and what's actually been going on in the news versus all these the amount of information. I feel is just crazy, just, you know, pinging in on everybody's phones 24/7.
Yeah, and even just on that front, again, you know, as we said earlier, that's where the international collaboration is helpful as well, right? As countries team up together to help fight that, because if you're so focused on trying to solve actual health crises or health-related issues, that attention diverted to deal with, oh, maybe if you consume turmeric just a bit more, that you'll be safe from corona, from the illness, right? And well, that shouldn't be the case. You shouldn't have to fight against that all the time. But it's a task that I think is unenviable, and that these nations, and ours included, has to keep up. So we're going to have this chat in depth together with Boon Negara, Senior Fellow for Foreign Policy and Security Studies at ISIS Malaysia. Boon, thank you so much for joining us.
Welcome.
When have we seen other moments of international collaboration in the past?
Well, there was the time when we had the SARS outbreak, and then, avian flu, things like that, but relatively contained compared to this time. So COVID-19 seems to be the worst so far, and the worst may not be over yet on the global level.
This situation is unprecedented and not necessarily one that we have a lot of experience with. What differences might we see, therefore, in terms of collaboration, especially when it comes to both funding and on-the-ground measures compared to previous instances?
Well, I think what is quite apparent to many people this time is the quite different approaches taken by different countries. Obviously, each country experiences it at different level. You know, it's more serious in some countries than others. But those countries that are not quite as serious as some cannot be complacent, because, you know, things can get worse very quickly, as it has in some countries already. So, you know, every country has got to be prepared for the worst, putting whatever resources it has to it. And very much key to all this is international collaboration and coordination.
What can ASEAN learn from the intensifying situation in Europe?
Well, I think ASEAN also has to learn from its own experience, because it's also suffering from it, in this region. So, what we can learn from Europe is not to be so complacent, because the West generally, Europe and the US, they have actually lost valuable time. At first they were not quite affected. Some countries not affected at all over there. They think it's too far away. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're never too far away from a global pandemic, because it spreads quickly and it spreads exponentially in a way that is very unpredictable. So I think they have lost valuable time, and we cannot afford to do that, especially when we are, in Southeast Asia, closer to Wuhan than anywhere else, any other region, in Wuhan being the epicenter, although things have improved there, apparently.
So what can we learn from... what are the latest measures ASEAN is taking to curb the outbreak?
Well, this kind of thing is not entirely new to ASEAN, because there have been meetings and coordination and plans in place for going back over 10 years. You know, the ASEAN Charter came around in 2008. And even before then, 2007, ASEAN had already sat down, member countries have sat down to discuss and put on paper arrangements just for this kind of pandemic. At that time, AIDS was a major factor. These meetings and arrangements have been at different levels, at the level of health ministers, as well as on the level of senior officials of the various governments, as well as on the level of experts, medical experts, and so on. And, it's a matter of getting the arrangements working smoothly and optimally. We've also had in ASEAN the arrangements laid down on developing the right and best responses to a pandemic just like this one, as well as developing the pharmaceuticals and drugs and vaccines that are required for it. But at the same time, you have to remember that ASEAN countries, being mostly developing countries, are limited in their resources. So, this is where I think we need assistance that we can do with assistance from more developed countries. Right now, in fact, there's been increased cooperation we've seen between ASEAN countries and China. Last month, the foreign minister of China, Wang Yi, has met his counterparts in ASEAN, and I believe later this week there'll be another meeting to actually iron out the specifics.
So during times like these, what happens then to perhaps some of the more strained relations between some of the ASEAN nations? Are those put on hold to just mainly then focus on dealing with the current issues at hand?
I think the SOP, if you can call it that, is basically to, you know, put aside whatever differences we have had or still have, because these are relatively minor or petty. This pandemic is a serious threat to everybody. It does not, you know, discriminate against borders, race, religion, age, gender, or anything else. So everyone has got to cooperate for the benefit of everybody. We have no other choice.
There are two major concerns at this point in time. Firstly, the lack of certainty as to what new developments may come. And secondly, how long countries will need to plan for this. What can be done to account for these issues?
We can learn, and we have to be very perceptive and quick in learning from what is happening in other countries as well. For example, how China has achieved considerable success so far in containing it, despite it being the worst affected country. The response has to be quick. Resources have to be allocated, optimally and swiftly, right where it is most needed. We needed a lockdown, then you impose a lockdown. But you do not want to be premature about things like that, because you do not want to trigger any panic, which will make things only worse. So I think we can learn from other countries, whether it's in Europe, the US, or in China, or any other countries in Asia.
And last question before we let you go, Boon. What are some immediate priorities ASEAN needs to focus on collectively right now, besides taking steps like travel restrictions?
Well, a lot of it has to do with common sense. Governments have their role in giving advice to the general public and so on. But at the same time, the people have to do their part. Do not go to places where there are crowds unnecessarily. And most of the time, it's not necessary. Spend time with the family, stay at home, and enjoy your privacy. That's better for everybody. You don't spread it to others, others don't spread it to you. The chances are much less. So, these are all common sense things. Why go out to socialize at a time like this? You can do it at some other time. Social distancing is something that is a kind of vogue term now. Let's do that. And if everybody were to do their part, then it will make things easier. It will make those who have been infected, be able to be subjected to treatment more successfully, because more attention can be allocated to them than to take care of crowds mingling everywhere else. Everybody, whether they're affected, infected or not, has to do their responsible part.
And I promise this will be the last one before we let you go, actually. We're also, I guess, on that note about that advice coming from up top about social distancing as well. And when we do see perhaps some of the world leaders, some politicians, some ministers globally, perhaps also affected by COVID-19, some of them being having been tested positive. With cases like these, what do you think that does for the general public's perception on the outbreak? Does that give confidence that the governments there are handling it well, or does it perhaps give off the signal that, now that my minister, someone who is prominent, someone who has that amount of wealth within office, can get it, I can get it as well. What do you think that it signals?
Well, it depends on each person's response. The best and most commonsensical response is to look at it positively and constructively, which is, if a minister or some leader in some country were to say that he or his spouse has contracted the virus, then it's a sign of transparency and honesty. Mm. And then take it as that. And let everyone not hide anything. Be clear and honest about things so that everything can be resolved as quickly as possible. If someone is infected, the spouse is probably infected as well. So, because of the proximity and so on. So if a prime minister's wife, for example, as it has happened in a few countries now, has got a virus, then the prime minister should perhaps also say, at least make it clear whether he has it or not. Then that would set people's minds much more at ease and, would have greater trust in the government as well. So, again, this benefits everybody, whereas the opposite would create very opposite results, which would be very negative.
Boon, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you. Welcome.
That was Boon Negara, Senior Fellow for Foreign Policy and Security Studies at ISIS Malaysia, talking to us about coordinated international efforts to tackle COVID-19. And I guess the message there is essentially, on a general level, social distancing is meant as a means to that you can start caring for your community, right? By choosing that, well, I may have a healthy immune system. I may be someone who be very healthy, but that doesn't mean that just because I'm healthy, I cannot pass it on. That's also something that we also see perhaps needing to extend to the community at large. So we're going to head to the 7:30 news. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.